A question to begin with. When there's challenges in life, whatever they may be, big or small, how are we going to respond? Well, I was thinking about this earlier on this week, and here's some of the things that came to mind for me. I was born in the 80s, so my first response might be this one. Maybe some of you might recognise that one as well. Of course, the well-known film Ghostbusters, that we can turn to apparently when things are looking a bit iffy. Perhaps this might be our response if we're taking a more modern look at it. Is it apparent that in Google we trust? I don't know, maybe we do. More often than not, we find ourselves turning to there for answers. What about this one? Does anyone else wish that their computer had a button like that? I think if mine did, it would be getting overused probably. What about times when there's challenges that come our way and we just want to panic? Almost dad's army style. Don't panic, don't panic. What about this one? Bury our head in the sand. I thought it was a wonderful picture until I looked closer and realised that that chap has a jacket much like my own. Then I looked even closer and realised that his watch is quite similar to mine as well. So perhaps it's prophetic, who knows. As we start to chart the history of God's people, here in what's unfolding in this chapter before us, chapter in terms of pages, but also chapter in terms of era, what is unfolding here is a challenging one, a truly challenging one. What's unfolded is that we've seen the fall of Israel. Remember, it was Israel that was to the north. It had been spoken about by the prophets, and well, it had come to be. They'd had their fair share of bad leaders, one bad leader in particular, with a people who followed him, and well, the collision course had been set. The events which unfolded were that the Assyrian army overpowered them, and they took the people and they settled them elsewhere in foreign lands. We've gone from having this once great nation, a nation that was united, to this split. And then all of a sudden it's starting to get dissolved as we see Israel taken off into captivity. Well, it certainly was a sad state of affairs. And it left Judah in a precarious situation, particularly for this young leader, Hezekiah, 25 years old, and he'd just taken the throne. I'm trying to imagine a metaphor for what it must have been like for him. There was tiny Judah, with all these nations surrounding, not with the same mindset, not with the same trust in God. Imagine you go for the same walk each day along the coast, and you see a rock that the tide comes round. The tide never covers it, but it certainly comes up to it, and when the tide is low, you'll be able to walk out to it. Imagine that one day you decide, I know, I'll go out there and I'll sit and I'll enjoy the sun, since we've been having a little bit of late. Imagine to enjoy the sun. Before you know it, the tide is starting to gather around you. Before you know it, things are starting to look isolated. Now, do you trust in what you know? Trust in the fact that you're sure every time you walk past that the water's not going to come over it? Or do you start to hedge your bets? Start thinking, well, maybe between the waves I could make a dash across those wet rocks. Maybe I could make a swim for it. There's Judah, surrounded by different nations, almost as if the tide is coming in and surrounding them. These different nations certainly held different values, and they certainly did not trust in God the same way that his people did. Here's this threatening situation. Here's this worry. How to respond? Well, do you try and patch things up with one of these neighbours? Try and make an escape bid? It's a bit like running across wet rocks, is it not? Or do you hold fast? Do you trust in what you know to be right and true? That God is with his people, that he's watching over them, that he is protecting them. You stand firm in the confidence that we have in God. In time, as things unfold, we'll see that actually Judah go on to make some bad decisions, again, under bad leadership. Unfortunately, those will lead to them likewise becoming a nation that is exiled. Here, though, in this chapter, in this era, we see a leader who follows in the footsteps of his ancestors David, as we're told. A leader who shows an unwavering trust in God. Here we learn about King Hezekiah. My friend for the past week, I've been reading lots about him, and I've certainly learned a thing or two. I'd like for us this morning to look at this king, how he carries himself, how he cuts the figure of a person who, even though faced with challenges, is a spiritual person, someone who's quick to display their trust in God, and likewise quick to show that as they turn to God in prayer. And from this leader, I think it's right and good that we take an opportunity to think how we can learn from this, how we can learn from that example, particularly when we get tangled up in challenging times, whatever it may be that has led to that point, and equally when danger comes thumping on our door, when there's challenges that present themselves to us. So then, what unfolds for this young king, this young man of just 25? What we're told of as the narrative unfolds is that there he starts, and as he starts his kingdom reign, he likewise starts a new chapter. He has a good clear out. He gets rid of the idolatry that's in the high places, the worship of foreign gods and all the rest that goes along with it. Just as much as he clears this out, though, he likewise clears out some of the things that his father had left for him, the bad heritage that was there. We read in earlier chapters that his father, King Ahaz, had set up a relationship with Assyria. He'd paid them money in hope that they would protect him, that they would look out for him. He'd put his eggs in more than one basket. He'd spread his love around and had left him in a dangerous situation. But here comes King Hezekiah, and he realizes that having reliance on neighbours in that fashion, as opposed to relying on God, is not good at all. And so he says, enough's enough. I'm drawing a line in the sand. No more of that. As you might imagine, there's repercussions because of that. So he sorts out his internal affairs, likewise his external affairs, and because of this there is a bit of a fallout. There's threats that come from Assyria. In the section that we read from the story, we see this messenger that is sent from this king who's threatening. And this threatening king brings all these sorts of jibes and insults, all these twists and contortions of what is true. Is your God really going to protect you? Look at what I've got on offer here. Doesn't it look nice? Why don't you come over to this side? Oh, you've got a promised land. Well, I've got one as well. I'm sure you'll like it. Here, I'll send you a postcard. Maybe you'd like to come and see what it looks like. I'm sure you'll love it. That King Hezekiah, no, don't follow him. He'll just lead you down a path. He's saying trust in God, but honestly, has any God ever delivered from the power of the kings of Assyria? It's deceit, through and through. It's taunting, through and through. And let me tell you this, it's the oldest trick in the book. The oldest trick in the book for trying to go against God and his people. Go right back to Genesis 3 and you'll see that. And the devil asked Adam and Eve, did God really say that? Are you sure? Do you want to check back on your notes? Have a wee look. The taunting and the deceit carried on. As much as there's these strong words, though, what's also apparent is there's a very clear threat. A threat to God's people under the leadership of King Hezekiah. As all around them, the tide is rising. These nations that want to bring trouble to them. Well, in the face of these very real challenges, these very worrying challenges, we hear this king who stands his ground, who shows that he has a trust in God, even though the track record of his predecessors has been far from good. Seeing that example, I think there's some key things that we're able to learn. We can look at our own spiritual journey, and particularly when trials and challenges come our way, in whatever form that might take. Perhaps we might even be in the midst of trials ourselves right now. First thing then we can learn Early on in the reign of King Hezekiah, we see that he does some good housekeeping. He clears out some of the old stuff, some of the dark spiritual stuff that's holding things back. It's almost like having an audit of the spiritual life of this nation. But likewise, we too should maybe take the time to do likewise, have an audit. Ask some of the hard questions. What's the cost of some of these things? What's the cost of being paid up to a nation like Assyria? What's the cost of not showing our full trust in the Lord? Recently we were moving house, as you might imagine, moving to a new place. And as part of that, we have a good clear out. Probably not as good a clear out as I could have had. I still move lots more than I ought to. And Lynn's smiling at this point, as I'm sure she agrees, that I could have done with throwing some more stuff out. But there is that opportunity to get a fresh start, to realise the things that are duplicated that we can get rid of, take to a charity shop or whatever else. Realise the things that are still in the box from last time you moved. Maybe it's time to get rid of them if you're not using them. But also we can realise the things that are perhaps a little bit dangerous. Maybe something where the cable's frayed and likely to give you an electric shock the next time you plug it in. Maybe that shoggly set of ladders that you should have thrown out a long time ago. Perhaps you might go to the back of the cupboard and find a tin of beans that went out of date last millennium. Start to think, well, maybe it's time to have a fresh start. Maybe it's time to begin again. To have a good clear out. Well, if this is true of the practical sense, then surely it's true in the spiritual sense. As we think of the things that are a danger to us, and likewise the things that might hold us back. There's Hezekiah, as I pointed out, in the early days of his reign. He's terminating this relationship with Assyria, and he's making a fresh start. His father had set a bit of a bad track record for him. He didn't really get a glowing report in the previous chapter, let me tell you that. And he'd showed in the way in which he set this relationship up, he'd shown a lack of trust. Can't have been easy. I'll just undo everything that my father's done. It can't have been easy, but it had to be done. He took the objective look. Likewise, too, in our own spiritual life, maybe there's a call to take an objective look and ask, are these things compromising our trust in the Lord? Are these things setting us up for a fall? Are they putting us in an awkward situation? Jesus broached this subject, and it was to do with money. It's a topic that often came up. His words in the Sermon on the Mount is that you can't serve two masters. You can't love both God and money. You can end up loving the one. So you can't serve both God and money. You're going to end up loving the one and hating the other. It's from Matthew 6:24. There's lots of other examples is the rich young man. Jesus says, well, you've got to sell your possessions. And he goes away sad because these were the things that he loved the most. There in his spiritual assessment, what are things going to look like? Challenging stuff. Be the first person to say that. But isn't it wonderful news that in Christ we have this fresh start, this new beginning? A hope that won't let us down. A confidence that we don't have to buy into. That we don't have to keep on handing over silver and gold for the treasury. Just like King Hezekiah and the relationship with Assyria. What an example he sets. Likewise, an opportunity too for us to follow suit, to ask that hard question. Well, having shown that he has this robust trust in God, that he wants to clear out, make a fresh start in his spiritual life, what unfolds in the narrative afterwards is that there's more threats. It's a bit of a bleak picture, to be honest, as this threatening and overpowering nation gets closer and closer. Understandably, Hezekiah is worried about this. I think I would be too, if I was a leader. And he takes his worries to the prophet Isaiah. That's where we get a chance to learn about Isaiah, and perhaps maybe in some of your own study time, sharing with others or by yourself, you get a chance to learn more about this prophet, a prophet who brings challenging words, words of comfort, likewise words of hope. Here though, in this instance, Isaiah speaks of encouragement from God in a very real sense. Then the king of Assyria, Sennacherib is his name, he gets drawn into battle with Egypt. But he takes the time to send a threatening letter. I'm not quite sure how it would have been delivered and what colour of envelope, but you can begin to imagine. He sends a threatening letter to King Hezekiah. "Look at all the other nations I've sorted out," he says. "Look what I've done to them. They stood up against me, and look what happened. And well, what about their gods as well?" He starts to taunt them again. "Where was the gods of these nations when they stood against the king of Assyria?" You can imagine him puffing out his chest as he wrote it, sitting there with a smug grin. "What are you going to do, Judah? What are you going to do, Hezekiah?" And with a threatening letter like that, how might we respond? I imagine we're probably going back to some of those pictures that I put up on the screen first of all. We wouldn't be able to do Ghostbusters or Google, they weren't around then. We might have done a bit of panicking. We might have wanted to bury our head in the sand. Well, this great spiritual leader that we've been reflecting on this morning, what was his response? On his knees in prayer. We're told in chapter 19, verses 14 and 15, that upon receiving this letter of taunt, of deceit, this worrying letter, King Hezekiah goes to the temple, spreads it out, and he prays. In the temple there, with this worry, with this burden, spreading out before the Lord, he's on his knees in prayer. What we're going to see is that God actually ends up delivering them in this instance. Here though, with that worry, with those things coming our way, what's our response? If we take just one image this morning, I want it to be this one. When threatening things are thumping on our door, when there's worries, when there's deceit, when there's threats and challenges, how is it that we are going to respond? I encourage you to take a leaf out of Hezekiah's book. Well, that's coming down here through the week, tapping on the door, getting Candace to let you in and say, "Can I just go and have some time, quiet prayer myself?" Maybe it's out and about, walking in the streets, or even in a closed door, in a room upstairs with the door closed behind you. Laying it out, bit by bit, before the Lord. King Hezekiah, what an example to learn from, eh? As we perhaps take the time to read of his story, what he went through, what he came through. Likewise, here is an opportunity for a bit of personal spiritual assessment, but also to that opportunity to lay it out before the Lord, to pray. As we began in our singing, "Are you weak and heavy laden? Take it. Take it to the Lord in prayer." Let's pray together.